Hello and welcome to another electrifying episode of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Please put your seat trays in their full upright position, and your seat cushions can be used as a flotation device. Because on this week's show, we try to figure out how new is the new Games Workshop. We find out how tech demos can change my mind about things. AMD is hard at work making graphics cards that are still not as good as a year old NVIDIA's. And I get a chance to review Dawn of War 3. Finally, the Wheel of Destiny asked me, why is our data for sale? But first, a word from this week's sponsor. The Backup Gun Rack. For kids!
Over 100 million Americans keep guns in their homes for protection.
Are you in a flyover state and feel that your family needs protecting?
The Second Amendment to the Constitution guarantees all Americans the right to keep and bear arms, but these arms must be accessible.
Do you need lethal stopping power in case you are inadvertently awakened in the middle of the night by your wife or dog?
The patented Backup Gun Rack keeps your shotgun at your bedside and is easily hidden by blankets and sheets. The patented backup device slides easily between your mattress and box spring and mounts your shotgun flush at your bedside, enabling access to your shotgun while in the lying position in your bed.
Our gun rack are made from genuine recycled popsicle sticks so that you can impress your intruders with how green you are.
For only $39.95, you can own the backup to make your guns accessible to you when you need them, yet hidden and out of the way when you don't. For only $39.95, you'll get the valuable time that may be needed to adequately protect you and your home.
Act now and we will throw in baby's first gun rack. Make sure your infant can protect themselves with our crib mounting technology.
It's the smartest money you'll spend in your life. Get up now and call the number on your screen. Make your firearms accessible by ordering the backup. It's adjustable to fit any shotgun. Many customers are buying one for each side of the bed.
Seriously, this is an actual product Americans can buy. You can order it off of Amazon.com right now.
Call or go online.
What the fuck is wrong with us? And now, the news.
Didn't this just happen 3 years ago, news?
Games Workshop has just announced a new rule set for Warhammer 40K. Again! The 8th edition rules for Warhammer 40K will be coming out this summer, and Games Workshop is giving those core rules away for free! In 2015, Games Workshop launched The Age of Sigmar, which replaced Warhammer Fantasy, and one of that features of the release was that the core rules for that game were also free. You could download this handy app or even pull PDF files from Black Library to your phone or tablet. When Age of Sigmar was launched, however, it was met with fierce derision from the loyal Warhammer Fantasy gaming community for its lack of point system, ditching of movement trays and square bases, and non-new forces were essentially dead in the gaming system. Games Workshop did end up releasing a new point system and came out with two new factions. Eventually. But many saw it as too little too late to bring back the core gamers to fantasy. Little did they realize that Games Workshop didn't want those gamers to come back. Market research showed that they never bought anything, and often were impediments to the growth of the new customer base. So, now we are going to go through a new rule set. But with the lessons learned from the rough AOS release. And honestly, it looks pretty fucking spectacular. Now, I like having a handy hardcover codex at my disposal, plus they look good on my bookshelf. But I may just end up making the switch to digital for non-Forge World books. I will never give those up. I am excited, but I'm also a bit perturbed, like most 40K enthusiasts. Back when I joined Games Workshop in 2011, we were on 5th edition. Fast forward to today, and we will be on 8th. That is a new version of the game every 2 years. 5th edition lasted longer than the previous two editions combined. That's nuts. It's also a lot of money for those who want to keep up. Any enthusiast knows that this is part of the hobby, but sometimes we need to breathe a little. At least, you know, the buy-in cost will be much lower now. And that's the genius of it. This is what Games Workshop is trying to do. They're trying to expand on the spending of their customer base over time and not just in large chunks. It used to be when you started 40K, the average customer dropped about $200 to $500 the first year and about $100 a year after that. That's why so many editions and codexes have launched over the past 5 years. It's very profitable for those that kept up. Now, I think we might see a new focus for the company. One, more customers and experience focused. Will it work? Are Jacaro's orange? The answer is yes. Yes, they are.
Enjoy our private dining room, folks. This is where we serve our richest, most successful chumps. Tonight, that's us.
What have you got that's really overpriced?
Everything.
Bring me that.
Make it two. And a glass of all your water.
And this might make more sense for more people now, news. Last week I talked about Microsoft's upcoming console codename Project Scorpio. If you listened, I got into several details about how future-proof this box is. But that future-proofing will come at a cost. And it seems you will want its power, you'll need a new TV and new cabling. Now, I might have changed my mind because of a tech demo. While Microsoft's initial review of Project Scorpio placed heavy emphasis on 4K gaming, the huge GPU upgrade relative to the Xbox One is going to bring a big visual upgrade for the majority of us still using 1080p too. Windows Central has some exclusive screenshots showing Scorpio both at 4K and at 1080p. The pictures aren't all of real games, but rather tech demos constructed to demonstrate just what the console can handle. They were shown at a private Microsoft event. The first tech demo shows what a steampunk scientist looks like in her lab coat and is intended to show what developers can do with minimal effort. The shaders, the textures, the models are the same on both Xbox One and Project Scorpio, with only rendering resolution improved. As we'd expect, going from 1080p on the Xbox One to 4K on the Scorpio brings substantial improvements in fine detail. This is particularly striking with the demo's character's hair. It actually looks like individual strands rather than a weird blob. And the fabric used in her clothes. The only difference between the images is in the rendering resolution. The model and the textures are the same, but 4K reveals details that are invisible to 1080p. Her shirt, for example, appears to be made of smooth fabric at 1080p. At 4K, we can clearly see where it's a woven texture. Much of this improvement remains visible when rendered at 1080p as well. 4K gamers will run at a super sampled 1080p on Scorpio, and while the obviously does not retain all the fidelity of the 4K image, the results are still significantly better than the Xbox One can currently manage. This means that even if you're still playing on your same TV with the Scorpio, your games are going to look better. And that's huge. That means more people will want this system. I mean, I already want it, but now there's a new reason for me to buy it.
Switzerland is small and neutral. We're more like Germany, ambitious and misunderstood.
Look, everyone wants to be like Germany, but do we really have the pure strength of will?
I say we do.
In I Still Will Not Buy This news, a little over a year ago, after launching the last Radeon Pro Duo graphics card, AMD is back with an all-new version that has the same name, but makes a whole bunch of changes. The new Radeon Pro Duo mashes two separate 14-nanometer Polaris GPUs with 2,304 stream processors, 128 texture units, 32 ROPs, and 16 gigabytes of graphics RAM apiece, for a total of 32 gigabytes into a single card! As the name implies, the card is being aimed primarily at professional users rather than gamers. It's based on the Radeon Pro WX7100 workstation GPU, which uses one GPU with most of the same specs as the Radeon Pro Duo, but with 8 GB of RAM instead of 16. The card is quite different from last year's Radeon Pro Duo. The card launched at $1,499, which is a whole hell of a lot more expensive than NVIDIA's, 1080, and featured a pair of 28-nanometer Fuji GPUs with 4,096 stream processors at 4 GB of RAM each. It was also a power-hungry monster, requiring its own closed-loop liquid cooler, 3 external PCIe power plugs, and as much as 350 watts of power. The new card only needs 2 power plugs, uses an air blower, typical on most GPUs, and has a rated TBP, typical board power, of 250 watts. The end result is a card that has less processing power. AMD claims to offer 11.5 teraflops of performance compared to 16 of the older Radeon Pro, but one that is also substantially cheaper, cooler, and less power-hungry, and you get dramatically more RAM to boot. Dual GPU cards are admittedly niche products, but they are also useful as a way to get 2 GPUs into a computer with a single slot, for 4 GPUs into a machine with 2 slots that you don't mind diminishing returns. AMD releases dual GPU cards with the same regularity, and the Radeon R9 265x2 came out in 2014, and the Fiji-based Radeon Pro came out a little over a year ago. NVIDIA has dabbled in this space too, but it hasn't released a dual GPU card since the G4 GTX Titan Z in early 2014. Recent Titan cards, like the just-announced Titan XP, have focused on offering higher individual GPUs with wide memory buses. So wide. Like, you could park two buses end-to-end. It's ridiculous.
The new Delivery Kings? I'm sick of hearing about those turtle squirts.
But they're kings, Mommy.
Jam a bastard in it, you crap!
Ow!
In If You Don't Like It, Stop Playing It reviews, Dawn of War 3 came out this week, and it's mostly excellent. Many of us who love 40K and RTS games have been looking forward to this game for a long time, since it seems like the last one came out about a decade ago. The third game scratches almost all the itches, but it also leaves some things to be desired. First, it's gorgeous. Second, it has a lot of units, including many of the new models that have come out over the years. Thirdly, there are a lot of 40K fan service. Fourthly, it plays pretty well and is nicely balanced. That said, the campaign isn't long enough to my taste, and there aren't enough factions, and there aren't enough multiplayer modes. Now, I'm sure this will be addressed in future DLC, but damn, guys, couldn't you pack a bit more into a $60 game? While I said that the game ran well, it runs well as long as you're connected to Relic servers, which is required even in single player. Not cool, guys. Critics have actually kind of loved this game, but consumers, not so much. You can look at the litany of Steam reviews panning this game for some of the reasons I've mentioned, and they don't recommend it to others, even though most of them have put over 40 hours into this game. I mean, you had to like it enough to put a full work week into the game, right? Now, would I recommend it? Are squigs mouths with feet? The answer is yes. Yes, they are. Mouths with feet.
The ballot was confusing.
How about a hand recount?
Okay. Ow!
Oh, Wheel of Insanity, I'm sorry I didn't spin you last week. Could you please give me a topic that won't make me hate my life? Well, shit. Discuss net neutrality. Well, okay. 2 years after the Federal Communications Commission reclassified broadband internet providers as common carriers under the Title II of Communications Act, Federal Communications Commission Chairman Ajit Pai is proposing to reverse that decision. Pai's speech was hosted by FreedomWorks, a group that Motherboard describes as, quote, perhaps best known for helping launch conservative Tea Party movement, and also for producing a video depicting Hillary Clinton having sex with a giant panda. Seriously. FreedomWorks called last year's court decision upholding FCC's net neutrality rules a, quote, blow to internet freedom, unquote. A press release making this announcement was titled, Restoring Internet Freedom for All Americans. Funny thing, though, I simply don't remember losing anything having to do with the internet other than my privacy, which Pai and his freedom-loving GOP buddies in Congress are already selling off. In 2015, FCC reclassification at the heart of this came about after years of wrangling over finding an approach of keeping carriers like AT&T, Verizon, etc., from being able to choose the speed at which they delivered content, or deliver it at all. In a nation plagued by inequality, an open internet remains a powerful equalizing force, allowing good ideas to flourish or die regardless of where they came from. The principal argument in the past for such net neutrality has been made on behalf of many startup businesses whose creativity drives the expansion of a digital economy. Advocates have long argued that other standard would allow major telecommunication companies another advantage in tightening their grip on the market. Entities would have to pay premium to gain visibility. In an editorial at Verge lays out just how bad FCC rollback could be based on past behavior. Quote, Title II regulation simply gives the FCC the authority to make sure that those ISPs are behaving, a power that the Republican-controlled FCC wants to relinquish at the very companies that they are supposed to monitor. Chairman Pai said as much earlier this month when he floated the nonsensical idea that broadband providers self-regulate by putting net neutrality provisions in terms of service agreements. End quote. Well, I have nothing against startups and commercial services having unfettered abilities to reach consumers. I mean, you are listening to this, aren't you? There's a larger and more ominous possibility, namely that monetizing accessibility offers the ultra-wealthy the opportunity to ensure their political messages get prioritized. Political messaging can be huge, and we can look at people like Bob Mercer and the Koch brothers as evidence of this. But it's hard to stay away from politics with this topic, yet I will try. Let's look at what Comcast has done. Comcast stands accused of lowering its speed of its customers streaming Netflix unless Netflix came to some kind of monetary agreement with them. I say accused because legally that's what you have to say in this instance, but both companies admit this happened. But they're saying nothing illegal took place. This is a literal case of pay to play, which sounds just about as Washington and K Street as you can get. But the implications can also be horrifying. Think about it. Microsoft might be able to pay Comcast to only support Bing searches, and Google would have to be ratcheted down. Disney might pay Verizon to only allow ESPN broadcast of sporting events. Even the most die-hardcore, laissez-faire capitalist has to concede that this is a bad idea, and that this can only end in full media monopolization by whoever writes the largest checks. There might be competition, but we all end up losing. Let me keep this simple. All you need to do is look at who supports the removal of net neutrality and who supports keeping it. If you are on the same side as Rupert Murdoch, you are on the wrong side.
Is it any wonder that in a massive recent customer satisfaction surveys, Comcast and Time Warner Cable came in dead last. And when you look at the companies that were scored better than them, people were basically saying, yes, Bank of America took my home. Yes, Taco Bell gave me diarrhea. And sure, GM tried to kill me, but Time Warner and Comcast are the worst. They are the worst.
That's all we have time for this week on Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. If you got some extra money lying around you don't know what to do with, why not give it to us? Visit our Patreon page and donate. I'm Kevin from the Quarter Nerd saying, actually, I don't have any catchphrase this week. Bye!